Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now, welcome to The Art of Potential with your host, Kristen Heemstra, on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Hello, and welcome to The Art of Potential. This is Kristen Heemstra on 1360 WCHL, and do we have a treat for you today. The name of the show today is College Ready, Incredible Parenting Advice for Fostering Independence, Responsibility, and True Confidence in Your Young Adult. This is a show that is very close to my heart. I have worked as a high school guidance counselor. I have worked with thousands of families. I've also taught at the college level. I've taught freshman orientation classes. And I have seen incoming freshmen who are both prepared and unprepared to be having a college experience. One of the things that I want to do is share with parents ways that they can get their young person prepared to go off on their own, live in a new city, take care of themselves, show up to class when they need to, and really regulate their own behavior in an environment that is not native to them, so a foreign environment. So what I have done is I have found one of the best examples of a student who I have seen who is college ready. And her name is Lee Kuning. And Lee is at Purdue, and I'm going to have her talk here in a minute. And I also have her mom, Verlene, here with us because Lee didn't just emerge on herself. There was a lot of work that went into helping Lee become the successful young person she is. So, Lee, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, starting with where you went to high school and where you're going to college and a little bit about your plans.
Hello, Kristen. My name is Lee. I started out at Chapel Hill High School for 2 years until Carrboro High School opened up. I was class president at both schools, so I got a pretty good insight on both atmospheres. I graduated in 2009 and have studied at Purdue University for the past 2 years. I'm a sophomore, majoring in public relations and rhetorical advocacy, minoring in business and graphic design. I absolutely love it. I'm so happy to be far away, but yet close enough that I'm always home on the holidays. It's not too hard to get back.
Fabulous. And Verlene, let's hear from you a little bit about where you're from. Are you from the Chapel Hill area? Kind of what brought you here and a little bit about your experience being a parent.
Hi, Kristen. My name is Verlene and thank you for having us today. We're actually from the Chicago area and we moved to Chapel Hill in 1997. We moved from my husband's work and found that it's a fabulous community to raise kids. Lee has an older brother who is now 24, and I think both of my children really benefited by growing up in the Chapel Hill area and attending the Chapel Hill school systems.
Wonderful. Well, what struck me when I first met Lee and Verlene were a few things. The first one being the give and take in their conversation and their comfortability with each other. Having worked with a lot of families and seeing some of the dynamics that can play out, I felt like they had a very healthy mother-daughter relationship. And that is something I always appreciate, having daughters myself, but also seeing a healthy one in action, especially going through the college admissions process, because that can be very stressful for some families. And so one question I have for you all is, clearly your communication just didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of work to be able to communicate so well to each other. So what advice would you give other people who are not as good at communicating as you all about how to build bridges of trust and bridges of respect between two people? Let's start with Verlene.
Well, I think, first of all, I've always, as a parent, really understood that my children are different people than I am. They have very different personalities. We have different strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes those complement. Sometimes they don't. But I really always tried to respect the fact that Lee was a very different person than I, and she had the right to be. And I tried to help her develop that right to be her own self. And I think that's critically important. I also expected that same respect coming back to me as a mom. I wasn't just a mom. I'm a person with my own history, my own successes. My children know that, but it's not lorded over them.
Right.
You know, I try to be my own unique person and get the respect that's due me for my role as an individual and as a mother. And so it's a two-way street, and you really have to respect each other. And secondly, I always try to treat my children as I would want to be treated myself. So if someone is doing something to me that I don't like, I don't want that behavior boomeranging back to them. I just feel it's very important to always treat your children with a level of respect, no matter how young they are, that you would demand for yourself.
I think that is excellent advice. And I know sometimes that can be a real challenge when you want to, and I'm sure you didn't have this, but I know as a parent, I have had moments where I've just wanted to clobber my children. I am the parent, I am the boss, but that doesn't facilitate the conversation and trust. That makes them not trust you because they feel like you're just their boss as opposed to somebody who, yes, you are in a role as a parent and therefore trying to help facilitate their growth, but you're not there to just create a clone of yourself or something like that. So, Lee, how did you experience the parenting style of your mom?
Well, today I would say she's by far one of my best friends. I could easily tell my mother anything. But I would say growing up, starting in middle school, she would always say words of wisdom from my mother would be, I'm not here to be your friend, I'm here to be your mom.
Yep.
So although at times we by no means got along,
yep.
And during my teenage years, I'm sure I thought I knew better than she did. But she always was there to be there to enforce curfew hours and there to set me straight whenever I was acting up one way or another. But at the same time now, I don't act up. I mean, I'm sure I do, but I would easily run to my mom for any advice, any sort of situation. Even I call my mom every day from school, which I think is a great way of showing how close we are.
Yep.
But I wouldn't say that it's always, not that it's ever been bad, but it's not like blooms overnight either.
No, it doesn't. And to your point, a curfew is a great example. You trusted that your mom would set the curfew and keep it because you know that your mom set boundaries both for herself and for you. And so while you might be tempted to test it, you also knew there would be a consequence.
Oh, yes. And by no means did I like curfew. I thought I had the strictest mom in town for having the 10 o'clock curfew. But at the same time, nothing good happens after midnight. There's no reason for a 16-year-old girl to be out past 12 o'clock. And so at the time I thought I was the loser kid for having to go home early, but at the same time, and looking back on it, there was a purpose, there was a reason for it. And so now I'm very grateful that when I didn't like it, there was a reason.
Sounds like you felt like you knew what you were doing. Like you were secure enough to say, so when Lee said, but mom, everybody's getting together, whatever, you were like,
nope,
that's great, no.
9 o'clock movies, well, you're still home by whatever time. You can go, but I will still be picking you up at 10:15, 10:30. So basically that was no to the movies.
And you try to be reasonable. Children need a social life.
Yes.
They absolutely need to develop their social skills, their social awareness. It's a critical skill, both in terms of the minefields of high school and college, and also the minefields of the work world, you know, and being able to get out there and make friendships. And you learn those social skills when you're young.
You do.
And you have to have a good set of social skills to succeed in the world. And so you have to balance that between what's appropriate behavior and where should they be and where shouldn't they be. And you also know that you're not going to know everything. Mm-hmm. Any parent who thinks they're clued in to everything their kid does is really deluding themselves because it doesn't happen. And once in a while, you know, you're the mom that calls the other mom and goes, oh, well, guess where I saw Susie?
Right.
And occasionally I was the mom that got the phone call that said, guess where I saw Lee? And that's part of being a community, and you want those kinds of relationships around you.
Very well said, because I do think, again, having my own community experience, those phone calls are very interesting to get.
And then never pleasant to get.
No, they're not. But yet you want to encourage your community to share that information with you, too.
Right.
And I think that's an important part. One of the things that strikes me is that you, as a parent, I know you weren't confident the whole time, but you seem to have some confidence in what you were doing. Can you tell me a little bit about that, if you felt that way or if that was just sheer bravado? I mean, when you told Lee you're picking her up at 10:15 or whatever, that's a confident parent saying, here's the boundary, and I'm confident in my ability to not just protect you, but parent you, show up, and, you know, we'll take care of business kind of a thing.
I had boundaries when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had very clear boundaries growing up. I lived in a small suburb in Chicago, and again, it was a community.
Mm-hmm.
Mothers watched out for other kids,
mm-hmm.
and within that school environment. So I always had boundaries as a child. It was easy to understand the importance of those as a parent. My husband and I also worked closely together parenting. So there was no dividing and conquering. You couldn't go to dad and want a different answer, you know, and think, yeah, that was going to work because we talked. And
they talked all the time. You could not try anything. Go ask your father. Okay.
So the kids couldn't play us against each other, and that was important. And they knew that, and that was a stabilizing influence.
And I don't think we tried to. I think it was one of those things that you learn from the start, and I think it shows a good parenting that they both, they're a team, and they're not there to see one way or the other. And so from a kid's point of view, you just looked at them as a unit. You didn't look at them as individuals, as mom makes all the decisions. Right. Dad's the cool one. Because at times, mom would be the cool one, and dad would be the mean one. And then mom would be the mean one, and dad would be the fun one. So they were both there to balance each other out, but they always worked together.
We also had dinner together every night.
Every night.
And that's a requirement. No TV. And even when my 24-year-old or 20-year-old comes home for the holidays,
it's still...
we really make an attempt to have dinner. I wouldn't say every night at this point, but
right.
No TV, dinner, have a conversation.
And did you cook?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good Lord.
Absolutely. She was a fabulous cook.
And sometimes it's not glamorous cooking.
Right.
It's just, it's not food out of a box, and it's not food from, you know, the local pizza guy. You know, mm-hmm. we made an effort to make good dinners. The kids had a good nutritious background or foundation. Mm-hmm. And no matter how angry you were with each other, you always had to appear at the dinner table.
But the thing about it is some of my best memories have been from dinner table conversations.
Right.
Like, I look so forward to coming home to a family meal, not because the food's amazing compared to school, but just because we have so much fun just, like, sitting there. We're always laughing. And although we might be, like, grumpy one day or another, we're always there, and it's always a lot of fun. And it's one of those things you just grow up with, and I'm very appreciative for that because I have wonderful memories of dinner table conversations because there's no distractions. You're all sitting there enjoying each other's company. There's no TV, no radio.
No cell phone. No,
it's just, like, it's just a wonderful bonding time.
Okay, so what strikes me about this whole thing is that your mom was creating a culture in your home, and I think you were also creating a parenting philosophy. Like, did you have, when Lee was born or just when you were going into this, some idea of how you wanted her to be as an adult? Like, did you give that thought, like, this is... And I'll give you an example. Like, I look at my children and I think, okay, I want a person who's able to go out in society, be successful, have personal resilience for when they get knocked down, and have social skills so that they can work well with others. Like, I actually have a statement about that I play back in my head, and I say these things to myself so that I know when I'm creating an environment or whatever, that's part of it. Sounds to me like you had a very affirming family. Like, that was something very important to you that you created in your home.
Yeah, I think we adopted the ethos that we both had growing up, my husband and I both had growing up. Mm-hmm. And that was a strong family environment, mm-hmm. that was two supportive parents, mm-hmm. that was a culture of friends around us.
Mm-hmm.
I always had the expectation that I would go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And for my generation, that was sort of, my generation was a crossover where college became the norm for women rather than the exception. And so I always had that for both of my kids, that going to college was very important for them. I wanted them to have the good grades.
So that message started early.
The message
like
started early.
Like, it was an assumption, you'll be going to college.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely. There
so
was just...
weaved in the conversation.
It was just not a doubt. It's mm-hmm. just sort of in the culture that we expected that they would do that, that they would attend school. And I also have to say that I have no patience with drama. With door slamming and head tossing, and you know,
you can't see it, but Lee's like shaking her head, like,
yeah.
No, she didn't.
But
yeah.
it was set early. It was set so early that I don't even have a memory of it. So it's not even like I was 13 slamming doors. It was just, you just don't handle things that way.
Right.
And still to this day, that's stuck with me. I don't lash out or have temper tantrums because I've never, from my recollection or memory, has that ever been accepted. And so that's a valid point.
So when you say not accepted, so what happened? Because I'm sure at some point you did have a tantrum because I think most people
do. I'm sure.
And what would your response have been?
I ignored it.
Okay.
Absolutely ignored it. There was just absolutely no benefit.
You're right.
But also I didn't escalate it into screaming myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I just walked away until things cooled down.
I find it interesting, too, because after talking to some of my friends at college, a lot of them don't have as great of a relationship, which I understand.
Yep.
But I'm surprised at how many of them will yell.
Oh,
yelling to
yep.
me is so not appropriate.
Right.
There is not a circumstance where you need to yell. I can't think of an instance where we've ever had a yelling match in my household. And I'm very grateful for that. And I understand not everyone can be that lucky. But I think it's a great way to start out. Yelling is just, there's nothing beneficial to come out of it. And I think that's definitely a positive aspect.
Well, it doesn't create a culture anyone wants to be a part of.
No, not at all.
All right. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra at Art of Potential, and I am talking to Verlene and Lee Cuny, and we will return. We are talking about getting your child college ready.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of What You Live Here For. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Hi, welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with Art of Potential. You can find out more about Art of Potential at artofpotential.com. You are listening to Verlene and Lee Cuney talk about what it's like to get your child college ready, get them ready to go off into the college world and be successful. So, Lee, can you tell us a little bit about how you were maybe a little different than your peers when you got into a college environment?
Well, I started out, I didn't know a single person on Purdue's campus. I went in knowing...
Were you scared?
I think to some degree I was, but at the same time, I knew it would work out fine. And sure enough, 2 years later, year and a half later, it has. And I'm very happy that I have gone and branched out and had to rely on my independence to know that it would be fine. Going in, you don't know anyone, so you just, like, be social. And I think that's the only way you start out, is you try to be as involved as many things as possible. And some of my main friends came from my dorm freshman year, and still to this day, I love those people very dearly. They're boys on one side and girls on the other, but yet we had a core group of probably eight of us that we all went to dinner every night.
Oh, that's great.
There's a small lunch group that just depended on your class time, but it came back down to, like, the dinner thing that we were mentioning earlier, where we still sat down every night, and it was just kind of like this fun little catching up on our day. We always had funny stories, and we'd have to try to find a giant hall or giant table in the cafe, but we did, and it was really sweet. It was really one of my most wonderful experiences from freshman year, just knowing that there's always that support group, but I didn't walk in.
Did you call people and invite them? Like, were you part of the person creating that group?
I think it started out like that. I think it started out as we'd all take turns, like, oh, what are you doing for dinner tonight? What are you doing for dinner tonight? Okay, well, my roommate wants to come too, and let's see what the boys are doing. And then, so there's probably six boys, and there's probably 3 to 4 of us girls. And then by the end of the year, it was just expected. Like, I'll meet you in the lobby at 6:30. And whoever had, like, a club meeting, that was fine. Tuesdays, right. Like, Pete wouldn't be there, but that was okay because we all knew that he would be there the next day. And so it was kind of fun. And other days you'd be like, man, I kind of want to branch out. But we still had that core group of people. Right. And still to this day, we are very close. But I think the meals, because you get to know people really well. Mm-hmm. And you get to talk to people outside of the party environment, which has its pros and cons. But when you sit down with people at a dinner table, then you actually... Here are their backgrounds.
Well, I want to talk about the party environment because I know from being in this community, being raised in this community, attending high school in this community, attending college in this community, and working in this community, that there is a huge party element here that as a young person, in my experience, you get exposed to a little bit earlier. And so you have, you know, you have some people who learn to deal really well with it, and then you have others who don't. How can you tell me a little bit about your experience and maybe give advice to parents and students who are trying to navigate this?
I would completely agree that there is a party culture in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. You see it very early, to be completely honest. You start to see it in middle school, and you know who's doing what, and you know that what alcohol is, and you start to learn about drugs. You learn it at a very young age, and to look back, to think about it, kids in middle school, that sounds really young, but to be totally honest, that's... really
That's
where it all starts. And growing up in a high school, you just have UNC, Duke, NC State all surrounding you, and you see these giant games, Duke versus Carolina, everyone, all the college kids are partying on Franklin Street. It's hard not to be a witness of it, and so it's hard not to also be sucked into it at a young age. And so I would say that everyone makes it out alive, everyone makes it out okay, but it can be scary. I could definitely see it could be scary from a parent's perspective. But at the same time, I think it sort of puts a good head on a kid's shoulder to know it's out there, but not to take part in it, I guess.
But not taking part in it is a choice that you have to make. And I
By
do
all
think
means.
That's important for people to realize. You don't have to participate in it to get along
with
the community. So what about, you know, what about your decisions enabled you to kind of feel confident in being around and keeping relationships with people who are probably partying more than you were, and yet keeping your own sense of balance about who you are?
Well, I think it's hard, especially in high school, to be social but not to be the one drinking.
Right.
And I think that it is hard to go out and find a place that, at a party scene, a 16-year-old kid, he's going to want to go out with his friends. And at that age, a lot of people are partying, having alcohol at their parties. And so I think it's just a matter of knowing what's right and from wrong, but to see it, then there's not the sense of it's like a hot commodity where you're where you do have it, so you have to drink it right away. And then it's like, it turns in, which is scary because I, by all means, I've seen that. And but you learn that when it is always around, then it's not as much of a an essential that you're so excited to have and thrilled and, oh my gosh, I have to drink whatever I have because every weekend it's there.
Right. So it's something you have access to easily and you just kind of accept as part of your cultural experience.
I would agree with that, yes, because it is there. It is very prevalent in Chapel Hill. And going off to Purdue, I realized that I knew far more about mm-hmm. the party scene than a lot of my peers did. Mm-hmm. A lot more. And for better or for worse, but it's made me who I am. But it's also made me not be the girl who got sick the first night of college because alcohol was not a new thing for me. And beer pong is very common.
Right.
And I had played beer pong before I went to college. But that made me, yes, a stronger beer pong player. But also, it made me realize my limits. And I think it's all about growing up and learning your limits to knowing that there is a time, but you need to know your limits.
You do, and that's part of how you define yourself, mm-hmm. is where you set that limit personally.
Yes, I would.
In all circumstances.
Yeah.
So as a parent, how did you facilitate this?
It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it is.
We've had a joke in our house since our oldest was born that moms get paid by the worry.
Yeah.
It really plays out when you have a high schooler, and yeah. especially a 16-year-old. But, you know, I think, as we talked earlier about curfews and boundaries and expectations, and, you know, my kids knew that if their curfew, if they were to be home at midnight, I would be there at midnight to know right. whether or not they were home. And we had a light in the living room, and the family tradition was if you came in after mom went to bed, you turned off the light in the living room. And so I would know you were in. But I always heard the security chime beep and mm-hmm. the back door close. And my kids knew that if it was 12:15, they would come home finding mom sitting in the kitchen.
Right.
You know,
but
it wasn't a discussion that was put off. It was, hi, how are you? I want to make sure you're sober and right. you're home.
But also at the same time, it wasn't hidden. With my talking to my mom about it, yes, mom, there will be alcohol tonight at the party. I will be driving. I will not be drinking. But it wasn't a hidden secret with her. It was like, mom, dad,
you
like
bring
this
up
is
a huge point.
This is where right. I'm going. Right. Yes, there will be alcohol. I don't know if there will be parents, but I'm telling you. And it completely built that bridge of trust.
It did. You hit on such an important thing.
And I think that's truly what's made my parents and my relationship so strong is that there really were not secrets. Everything was out. Yes, I know at times they would not be happy, but you know what? Like, I deserve them not to be happy. Like, that was the ramification of my actions. And so, mm-hmm. although I got scolded at times, and Lee, what are you doing? That's not okay. But you need that at times to know what is right and what's not. But they weren't sitting there like, oh, alcohol's not existent, because they knew it was there. And it wasn't a secretive thing. And so then it became really easy to be like, yeah, I'm going out. And I feel like, for the most part, that gave them trust in me to know I'm not going to be driving home.
Right, because you already told them, right.
And so it really helped.
And the kids who are over-sheltered and over-controlled as high schoolers are the ones who get into the biggest trouble in college.
They do.
They have no sense of limits.
That.
You know, now
no,
all the brakes are off. There's no one to play mom.
Right.
And those are the kids who are in the ER. Those are the kids who the police are arresting. Mm-hmm. Those are the kids the friends are covering for, trying to get sober. And it's a hard issue. And I think it's also hard for parents, my husband and myself included, when the drinking age was 18. When we went to college,
right.
the culture was very different.
Very different, yes.
And so now there's a huge game of cat and mouse
right.
with alcohol right now. And I think it's a really tough issue. I'm not sure we as a society have addressed it properly. But it's a really tough issue. But Chuck and I have taken the standpoint that we don't want secrets. You know, and we've also said to our kids, and I think this is really important, if you find yourself in a situation where you shouldn't be in, call me. 24/7, I will come and get you. No questions asked. No punishment for calling mom to come pick me up.
And I've used that. Mm-hmm. I have, by all means, mom, come pick me up. Still, I come home from college. My parents picked me up on New Year's Eve. Not many kids can say that. But mine did. And you know what? I'm very grateful for that. Although, it was a fun night, but my parents were there to pick me up. And give or take, I'm sure that could be frowned upon, but at the same time, there were no secrets.
No. And I would just like to talk about a little bit about my experience in the sense of working with high school students. The biggest challenges I see are when that level of trust is not there and when there is a prohibitive environment so this the child doesn't tell the parent that there's alcohol at a party, and then something happens. And sometimes it's a big thing that happens, and sometimes it's a really, really big thing that happens. But the parent doesn't – the child tries so hard to weave a web of, oh, no, everyone was, you know, watching Pinocchio and eating pizza and drinking chocolate milk. The parent then buys into this, that that's actually what's going on in the culture when it's not. They're missing part of their child's development, which is happening. And there's a lot of other spinoffs that can happen which aren't healthy, just from my personal experience. Well, I would like to thank you both for being here very much. You have given incredible advice to parents who are about to send their children off, and you've been an incredible role model, Lee, for a lot of people around the community. So anyway, you are listening to Kristen Heemstra. This is 1360 WCHL. You are listening to The Art of Potential, where we talk about all things career-related, including getting educated, getting hired, and getting inspired.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Art of Potential show, and we have two new guests with us right now. We have Corinthus Patterson and Cindy Patterson. Now, Cindy is just graduating from East Chapel Hill High, and Cindy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your plans?
I'm going to Guilford College. It's in Greensboro. And I'm going to double major in African American Studies and Visual Arts and minor in Film Studies.
Wow, you have quite a plan already, like, laid out, don't you?
Yes.
That is fabulous. And Corinthus, can you tell us a little bit about you?
Well, I pastor a church. I'm at New Jerusalem Community Church in Durham. Mm-hmm. I'm also a motivational and inspirational speaker, and I go by a title of being an empowermentalist.
Wonderful.
So the thing that I love and thrive on is empowering people with the tools for a successful life.
And we're going to talk about how you've done that with your very own children,
okay.
Which is definitely one of the most important groups that you work with, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So, Cindy, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your dad's parenting style and what worked and what you really liked, and you can even throw in some things you wish would have gone differently, but you don't have to.
Remember, I'm sitting here now.
Well, our house is really open. Like, my dad has set up an environment where me and my brother are, we feel comfortable talking to him and my mom about everything and anything. No subject is off limits. Like, I remember calling my dad sometimes and be like, can you get me certain products that I need to be a girl? And he's okay to, like, go and get them. And there's no, like, shyness because, you know, that's just a love thing. And it's also structure. Even though we can talk about anything, my parents, especially my dad, he makes sure, you know, he keeps the relationship of, well, I'm your parent, not your friend. I'm your parent. I love you. But you can't just say anything and do anything to me because it's a respect thing. Mm-hmm. And my parents have always, like, made sure that we keep God first, mm-hmm. and keep it so those religious morals have helped us make decisions in our own life. And it's not just, oh, we have to go to Sunday school, but it's a thing where I want to go because not only is my family there, my dad there, but it's something I can learn from. So it's just a really open, and there's no, like, subject off limit. And we rode to school with each other every day. Like, we didn't get on the bus. Nothing gets the bus. But and to school and from school, we talk about our day. And I just remember always feeling like I'm having a conversation with him and not just, you know how adults sometimes listen to kids, but they're not really listening.
Right.
But I always feel like he's listening and he hears what I'm saying. So
it sounds like you're a terrific listener and you're very invested in, or it sounds like your dad's very invested in your school day and what you're doing and who your friends are and wanting to make sure that you have the tools that you need to be successful.
Yeah.
Well, see, life is important, and I know some of the mistakes that we've made with our own families, being in my mother's family, not having my father there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were from a large family. There was eight of us.
Okay, that's a lot of family.
And so thank God that we had each other to have fun, but mm-hmm. far as getting into their life. Because, see, the only way to perfect a person's life is to, number one, listen to them
mm-hmm.
and to get into them. And especially with, we've been graced to have two children, my daughter Sydney, who's here, and my son Corinthus II. You know, the main thing that we were thriving for, Shirley and I, was that we build on their individuality.
Okay. So you recognize them immediately as an individual, separate entity from yourself.
And that's the key. If you're going to push someone to their greatest potential, you have to find out what that potential is, mm-hmm. and not something that you have prelude in your mind and said, right. When Sydney was born, she said she wanted to be a doctor. And one thing we realized that she's going to change. Sydney wanted to be so many different things. She started out a veterinarian. She wanted to be a doctor. She wanted to be this, that. And the thing that she really, that we wanted her to do, that she really had a knack for, we're still hoping that she fall into it. But Sydney is a very passionate and considerate and very thought-provoking person.
Yes, she is.
So she'll do well with anything dealing with the public, dealing with people.
Yes.
Something in the legal field or something in the political field. I know she don't want to be a politician.
No.
We had to break her from lying, so ain't no sense in going to be a politician. You know? But it's just a joy to see the children blossom. And Shirley and I made a commitment when we start having children that one of us would be available for the children.
Okay.
So that's why I had the flexibility being a pastor and a speaker. Mm-hmm. You know, it was important for us to ride with the children, talk to them about school, mainly, especially early on, give them some instructions on what we expected of them. Mm-hmm. And then on the ride home, find out how their day was, and then find out how close they fell in line with our instructions. Mm-hmm. But it was just a joy to get to know your children.
Right.
And to be involved with them. So like she said, there's no subject that's foreign to us. We talk about everything when they were younger. We gave them, laid down to them our expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lived before them. Shirley and I have been married 27 years. We lived an example before them of what a marriage and a family should be like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, and I'm always reflective on my relationship because I'm only as successful as I am with my family, regardless of what I do in the world, whether the pastoring or motivational speaking. If my family is not corrected, if my family is not strengthened,
mm-hmm.
then I'm really not that successful. And so and the Bible says it, you know, the man, especially in the pastor, I mentioned the Bible because I'm in a pastor. If a man can't rule his home, or have peace, or have his home in order, his children, then he's not fit to rule in the kingdom. So, you know, that family is your basis. And these people are with me every day, and they know me, they know my failures and all of that. So it's a joy to have these.
Well, and I want to go back to the ruling in the home, because that's such an interesting concept. There are many different ways to rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how you put ruling with peace mm-hmm. in it. So it's kind of like you are the king of the kingdom as long as the kingdom is a joyful place for mm-hmm. all the people to be a part of it. Does that jive with what
home
you're
is,
thinking?
A home is really not that successful if there's not peace.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not a sense of, number one, openness where the children can talk about things, even though Sydney has come with some crazy ideas from some of her friends.
Good.
You know,
as a teenager.
Being a teenager. But see, and that's the thing that we wanted to do, allow them to be teenagers, but at the same token, give them structure.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I've seen, and I deal with it on a church level, is that we try to let our teenagers be adults.
Yeah.
Teenagers are not
before
adults.
They're ready.
Some things only come with age and time. Mm-hmm. Experience, they say experience is the best teacher, but it doesn't have to be your experience. Many things that I've experienced, I shared with my son and my daughter about mm-hmm. how things go and how they turn out. So hopefully mm-hmm. to give them some instruction. But mm-hmm. at home, I make sure they don't see me arguing and fussing and disrespecting their mother.
Mm-hmm.
We don't disrespect one another. I don't disrespect with them. Sometimes I've even been reflective because I've fussed at Sydney and been hard on the children. Then I go back and say, wait a minute, maybe I was too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I didn't hear.
So taking responsibility
right.
for your own.
And then one thing that my parents never did, I came back and told them I was sorry.
Mm-hmm.
When I was wrong, I apologized. Please forgive me. Because, see, I'm trying to set the example that when you're wrong, you should apologize.
Yep.
And you should acknowledge it
and
don't be so pig-headed
it.
And own up to it. So that's something, I can't write a book about it because it's something that you learn as you go.
Mm-hmm.
But then once you learn it, you see the manifestation in your children. Sydney is graduating, going to Guilford College, and we're excited about her potential. And we can trust her to go away, even though my son is transferring, so he can get a watch for me. Yeah. He'll be my eye. But we can trust him. Yeah. We can trust him to
You're
go
not
away.
Getting away from family, no, are you? No.
Because it's only, we're originally from Chicago.
Yeah.
And there's only the four of us.
Yeah.
And I tell Sydney, and she wanted to go away. I want to go to Paris. I want to go here. I said, Sydney, listen, here's my promise. You go to school where I tell you in your first college experience. When you go to graduate school, you can go anywhere in the world.
Okay, so you decided where she went.
Yeah. In a sense, we decided it. I decided it with her prompting, considering her personality, mm-hmm. considering what's best for her. Because quiet as it kept, and Sydney is realizing it, even though our teenagers are smart and they get academic, they don't know what's best for them always.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly what's best for her, but I know what's best for her right now.
Okay, yeah. As her parents.
And dealing with her, and I base that not based upon what my perceptions are, but based upon my dealings with her and learning her. See, I've taken the time to learn my children.
Okay, so that you can better parent them.
That's right, because there's no way to do it, because the parenting that my parents did wouldn't work for these two.
Right.
And I would alienate them, then they would be addicted to a lot of drugs and stuff and doing a lot of crazy things, acting out.
Well, I'm glad you didn't do that.
Yes, I am too. I am too.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to hear from Cindy about what it feels like to grow up in a house like that.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. We are talking about getting college ready, and we're giving incredible parenting advice here. And right now, we're going to hear from Miss Cindy Patterson about what it's like to grow up in a house where it sounds like, from what your father was just saying, dad knows you best and therefore makes the best decisions about where you're going right now, not in the future, but right now. What is that like?
Well, it's comforting. Like, most, I guess society wants teenagers to be like, well, oh, I hate my parents and they just, you know, like they hold me down. But when you realize that, well, first of all, you've been together in the same house for at least 18 years and mm-hmm. you know people and they're not just parents, they're human beings and they care for you, mm-hmm. then you can't like hate them for no reason. And that's what I hear a lot of my peers may, you know, they rebel or whatever. And I trust my dad to make certain decisions, but it wasn't like he just sat there and was like, oh, well, you're going to this
right.
place.
It doesn't sound like that at all.
We had a conversation and talking about what I wanted and mm-hmm. just talking about it made me see more clearly. Because like dad said, like, I've wanted to be everything. I wanted to be a zoologist, but then I realized like you had to actually touch the animals. And so it was a problem for me.
That would be a challenge, yeah.
So, and I thought I wanted to be a fashion designer, and then I met the sewing machine and we didn't really get along. So but at least I've, you know, been given the chance to discover what I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And so
freedom too.
Yeah,
it's
freedom.
Very freeing.
And it's not, and I don't even have to, you know, go out all night or do these things. When I thought about college, it wasn't, because most people think, oh, you're going to college, so I'm going to party, party, party. No, it was kind of like, oh, well, I need to further get to know myself, but kind of more on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have fun too, but it's just, you know, it's more than just a party or having a good time, because I want, you know, you want to be something. It's kind of weird that I'm going to be 19 this year and I'm not a little kid anymore. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of my peers, because we've lived in Mississippi and in Chicago and here. And some of my peers are already married and they have kids, and it
wow.
freaked me out. So that's one thing I like about, you know, having my parents so involved. You don't have to look for love in other places,
right.
I guess. And so you don't have to find yourself in somebody that may or may not really care about you, or mm-hmm. they're trying to find themselves too. Mm-hmm. Like, at least you can talk with your parents and even talk about, I remember I went to the movies and my dad, you know, kind of scared who I was going to the movies with, because he had to be the dad. And I really appreciated that because I know some of my friends, like, they go to the movies and they have this whole social life that their parents have no clue about. And when something's wrong, they can't tell their parents because their parents don't have any clue. So they're, like, freaking out and they're trying to get us. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. But it's something that if your parents are involved, yeah, at the moment, don't get me wrong, it's not all like, oh, yay, my parents are involved. Sometimes I want to do stuff and they were like, no. But most of the time when I look back or I talk to my friends who actually did what I wasn't allowed to do, and then it's like, oh, well, you're not doing too great right now and I'm okay. And so with that, it's just the proof. Like he said, you live by example. And so when I can see it's not just, you know, a lesson, but I can see it worked, then it's okay. And not saying that I listen to them all the time, because trust me, I haven't, but
we know.
But at the times that it counted, when it really counted, it wasn't me pulling on my own, trying to like pull from somewhere I don't know. Like when I get into situations where I'm like, oh my goodness, there's three people on this planet that I know will give me the right advice because they care about me. And so that feels good.
What I really appreciate is it sounds like just as a family unit, you all are always taking into account each other's point of view. Like when you're talking about making a decision about where Cindy's going to college, you are actively looking at all the options and saying what's going to be the best match for my child, not, well, this looks like a good school, so she'll go there. Like, it really sounds like it was very Cindy-focused.
Well, see, that's one of the key factors of a successful family, and we're striving to be that successful family. Mm-hmm. Understanding the individuals, that's just like husband and wife.
Yeah.
You know, most time we get up, we go through the same routine. We get up, we go to work. We stay at work 12 to 15 hours. We talk to our friends. We see one another. Maybe we come home, have a little dinner, then I watch a little TV and then we go to bed. Mm-hmm. That's no way to run a family. You know, when you're involved and you're talking, the only way to know Sydney and know my son, Corinthus, is to speak with him and talk to them and then watch them.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been. We are strong disciplinarians, but we haven't had to use strong discipline with them.
Okay.
Because you start out early, you know, getting to know them, getting their point of view,
mm-hmm.
giving them the freedom to express themselves with respectability. And talking to them and guiding them. And when they're off, get them back on. Mm-hmm. But getting to know them, sitting down talking with Sydney, getting to know her friends. Like she talked about the incident of going out to the movies with a young man. Mm-hmm. I've always felt, you know, my family is important. I've been graced to have my family. There's no
so
sense
they're your blessing.
That's right. There's no sense mm-hmm. in me letting someone else mess up my blessing.
Right. It's
Sydney
your blessing.
Doesn't know.
You're grateful for them.
That's right. So I go. I want to meet. It's been mm-hmm. a standard that we had when they were children. You're going out with someone, we should meet them.
Yep.
You know, things have happened. Mm-hmm. We want to know. And then we want, you know, you're not getting ready to get married, but I want you to keep things in proper perspective. Then I let the young man know, you know, I love my daughter, mm-hmm. and I'll do anything for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I want her to come back here
mm-hmm.
the same way you She was like, can he pick me up? No, he won't pick you up. I'll drive you to the movies. I want to meet him. And then we laughed because my wife's sitting in the car and she took out her cell phone and she took his picture. You know, he had a hat on. Take your hat off. You know, and even though we were letting this young man know, and here's the real deal. Our children are valuable to us.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we try to instill into them is to have a value of other people and other personalities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you've modeled it.
And it's important for them so they can have that value. So when they're not they don't have problem with racism, sexism, and all of that classism. People mm-hmm. going to do what they want to do. Now, if they ask you your opinion about what you think,
mm-hmm.
you can give your opinion, but still be in consideration. The same thing with them. I want to know what you think, but you're gonna sweeten it up so well when you present it to me.
You know, because you're teaching her how to be good with people.
That's right. And then I do the same thing. Because
right.
sometimes I've been a little on the edge and I've been a little fatherly
mm-hmm.
in a sense, in a traditional way. But then I thought about it. You know, my daughter is a personality. I'm trying to build in her a strength. But if I break her down, then the man that comes into her life, he will break her down. She will be used to it. But if I listen to her, then she won't take some turkey that won't listen to her. She'll know right away, this is not right, because my daddy listened to me.
Okay, so you had another male in your life that listened to you.
Yes, and so really I'm trying to be, and on the serious tip, I'm trying to be everything that my father wasn't to me.
Okay, interesting.
See, instead of me looking at what my father wasn't and being angry, I said, this is what
yes.
I wanted.
Yes. No, it's crazy how that works, but sometimes to know exactly what That's you want, right. you have to see what you don't.
That's right. This is what I wanted. So then I try to be that to them. Sometimes I've failed.
Yeah, we
all. And I've gotten excited about stuff, and I've angered her and made her upset. And then I was repentant. I came back to Sydney. I still believe in what I said, but I said it a little harsh
yeah.
to you. And I shouldn't have spoken to you that way. You didn't deserve my my anger and all of that. And then I was free, and she was free. So she came back, so she didn't hold on to it. I'm mad at my dad. My dad made me so mad. So she knows in all of her life, if I've ever made her angry about something, whether I was right or wrong, I'm always coming in. And I do that with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never let her go to bed angry at me. You know, I come in and say, wait a minute, honey, we shouldn't be. We're one. We're a team. And that's the thing about a family. We're a team, and I want every team member to do its best.
For the you building them up
that's
so
right.
they can go out into the world and build the world up.
That's right. And then we have the grandchildren and all that. I'm looking forward to that phase after college.
Oh.
You know, the five babies I've been
There's
telling
no
her
pressure,
about.
Cindy, no pressure.
I told her about the five children, the three girls and the two boys. You know, that she goes, what? I'm not having no good. No, God's going to give you girls so you can get back what you gave us.
Such payback a different way of approaching that equation than ever. I want you to have a girl
dog.
Just like you.
That's right. Payback is a dog, boy. But it's been a wonderful experience. Having children, having a family, it's my best investment. It's my best attribute that I have.
Well, that is wonderful. And I really appreciate you sharing with us all of your wonderful advice. And Cindy, thank you for sharing with us as well. You are listening to the Art of Potential show. If you'd like to know more, you can go to artofpotential.com. You can follow us on Twitter, or you can check out our blog on chapelboro.com. Thank you for listening.
1360 WCHL wants to connect with you online for updates on our lifestyle programs, awesome giveaways, contests, trivia, community photos, breaking news, and more. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/chapelboro and become our fan on Facebook, and always connect with us online at chapelboro.com.